Good evening, everybody. You've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters. My name is Veronica Entwistle. And what are paradigm shifters? They're people who are making a difference in the collective at this time of the big shift on this planet. I have a great paradigm shifter today, a wonderful being who's been doing yoga meditation, studying metaphysics, and leading, teaching a lot of people, and also using astrology. David Pond from Olympia. Is it Olympia?
Yes,
Washington.
It is. Thank you.
And David's just put out a new book called The Pursuit of Happiness, Integrating the Chakras for Complete Harmony. And David leads, travels to what sacred places. You're about to go to Ireland. And David's going to also lead us through some understanding of what's influencing us astrologically right now during the shift. So welcome to the show.
Thank you, Veronica. Nice to be here today.
And it's wonderful to have you. David and I used to know each other years ago, but we haven't really been in touch, so this is a lot of fun for me. So thanks so much for being here. Now, I love your book, and the book is going through the chakras, and it's to meet the seven levels of consciousness and leading to happiness. But I found it was a little like kind of like spiraling up through our chakras always at new levels or like new dimensions. Is that your intention?
Absolutely. And I first wrote it with the intention of not referencing the chakras as much because these levels are very real and accessible to people. And with your audience, of course, the chakras are probably a very comfortable language. But I wanted to reach people who might not be as comfortable with that language, but yet these levels of consciousness that we have, a physical and emotional and mental and spiritual and the like, are all very clear and real to us. So that's what my intention was. Yeah.
I love the format because you could look at this book as an absolute beginner and get the many dimensions that are related to, or at least some of the dimensions that are related to the energy system. Wonderful. I really like it a lot. And,
thank you.
My pleasure. And I told you, I was trying to understand the observer and all that quantum stuff. And when I looked at the book, that's one of the first things that you were talking about. And you give some wonderful exercises all the way through the book on every level of whatever you're discussing, whether it's a chakra or the approach of the observer and so on. I was wondering if you can give a thumbnail about the chakras for people, or what do I want?
Well, no, I would be glad to. The chakras are, of course, they come from the Hindu yogic tradition, is where they were first identified in that particular language, chakra meaning vortex of energy. And it came to our understanding that there are all these different centers of energy, if you will. They're like the batteries of energy system all throughout the body. There's seven main ones, and we all have seven main ones. Each, the first three all deal with our personality, our the bottom, the first chakra, our connection to the body and to the earth, and survival, and the second chakra, pleasure and enjoyment, and our ability to enjoy and celebrate our survival, so that we're not just getting by, but actually enjoying it. The third chakra, located near the solar plexus, is here it deals with our willpower, our ability to, to be effective in the world, to be decisive, to initiate activity, to define boundaries. So these first three all define our separateness. And then we move up into what's called the upper chakras. The first is the heart chakra, where we basically start moving out of a competitive model of living life and start moving into more of a unitive way of recognizing that we are all here together. So it deals with all matters connected to love, everything from romantic love to compassionate love to universal love. And here, I think this is something that most people need help with, because when we talk about compassion, most of us aren't real skilled at dealing with our own emotions, let alone the emotions or suffering of other people. Many people have a fear that if I feel other people's pain. Maybe I won't be able to get out of it. Maybe I'll carry that around. And so we deal with different kinds
either
of
that, or some people actually do that without even having the cognitive awareness, eh?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, Veronica. And these times, if I can jump and talk about our collective astrology, I call this times, these times, awakening into we. Because all of the outer planets are in collective signs right now. And so the collective issues of our collective emerging beingness of humanity as a being that we are all cells within is becoming very strong. And that sounds lovely. But it means that we're all impacted by each other in ways that we're probably not aware of. And
I think it's a dominance of the heart chakra at this time?
Well, I think that is a shift, that we're moving into the heart chakra from,
okay,
in terms of humanity's rise. We're marching through the chakras, and now we're knocking on the door. We can talk about, in the big picture, the return of the divine feminine, where we've been in a patriarchal era for probably 5,000 years or so. And now the pendulum is shifting, and we're seeing many people worshiping God and Goddess, the whole feminine, the divine feminine. This is the heart chakra. And learning how to understand this, I think many people would love to be psychic unless they really knew what it meant. But I think we already are emotionally psychic, but we don't know how to distinguish that. We don't know that we're actually impacted by each other's emotions and feeling them without even knowing. We just feel the emotion, so we think it must be us. And it's very confusing for people to try to work through an issue that's not even their own. So I have quite a few exercises in the book about learning how to, what I call, feel it, bless it, release it with the emotions, to, instead of getting in and analyzing, why do I feel this, what's the source, what's going on, it to get out of the mind. When we're working with the heart and emotions, the mind doesn't help us at all. So here it's better in my mind, or in my mind, I say, in my view of this, to feel the emotions as they arise, bless them without analyzing them, and then release them in love. And this is a very helpful practice for many people to work with, is feel it, bless it, release it. And this is a way of awakening to the heart chakra without carrying all the emotions of other people that become so confusing.
It doesn't deal with it doesn't create resistance.
Yes, yes, that's right. We can move out of resistance or fear of this.
Mm-hmm.
And as we continue to rise up through the upper chakras, the fifth chakra at the throat is where we find our authentic voice and our truth and how to express that. And all issues around creativity, but first a person has to break free of all kinds of cultural conditioning about the beliefs that we've inherited and awaken to our own authentic truth. And then the sixth chakra, the third eye, the fabled third eye at the brow, deals with all issues of vision and image. And the artist and the spiritual seeker are getting the best of this because they're using imagery and vision in a way that brings back inspiration. And at the lower level, we've got illusion and fear. And fear is imagination-based, and many people are locked into fear. They're using higher chakra energy in a lower way by imagining things that aren't really happening, but maybe they might. And it brings back unhealthy energy. And then we move to the crown chakra, where there's an absolute connection to the divine force, where we surrender to an empowerment of being absorbed into the divine. So that's a thumbnail sketch of the chakras.
I like it because it's so transcendent, really, isn't it?
Well, it's the full range, I think, Veronica, because it's transcendent at the upper chakras, where we're really not in our own storyline at all, and it gets confusing when you try to make it personal. But the lower chakras, it's absolute personal. At the first and second chakra, my taste, what color, what food, what music, what kind of embrace do I like? Very specific to the individual. And then at the heart chakra, where we merge and interact, with specific others, and as we move up into the upper chakras, we're part of the collective being of humanity.
But we start off at the lower chakras as well. We are also at a different level part of the collective, aren't we? It's where lineage and tribe is as well, isn't it?
Well, it would be. It absolutely, that would be like the conditioning that goes on. And here, we have, I think, a bit of a judgment in many of our traditions that believes that the upper chakras are good and the lower chakras are not so good. Lori and I and my wife are taking a group of people to the Celtic lands, and this next few weeks we're going up to Findhorn and then over to Ireland. And the Celtic have a couple of images that are just delightful. One, they said, we were always misunderstood. People thought we were praying to the trees. We weren't. We were praying with the trees. Isn't that a lovely image? And they don't pray to God, they pray God. So that divine isn't separate from the physical. And here's another interesting phrase, Veronica, wrap around this one. The image that the body is in the soul.
Mm.
That's a Celtic tradition. Rather than the soul is this tiny little thing inside our body. They look at it as, oh, no, the body is inside the soul. The soul is much larger. That when we interact with somebody, you first interact with their soul body. Isn't that delightful?
It is. It's making me think.
It is, because it brings a reverence and a sacredness where we've, and I think in so many of our teachings, particularly religions, the world have looked at this as the fall from grace, as if we've been separated from the divine.
Mm-hmm.
And this, of course, in my mind, has created our separation with our environment. So we trash the planet because this isn't paradise anyway, because the real paradise is somewhere else.
Because it's
and
so
I like
hard.
The return of the feminine. The return of the feminine, these Celtic traditions are saying, this is the feminine, this is the divine, here, not somewhere else. Mm.
I like hearing that we're going to... Go ahead.
Yeah, so the divine, the soul-like, is infused with the body and our planet, and it is a sacred place and a gift that we've been given to be here. It's not the fall from grace, it's an act of grace. And that would change our relationship to the planet if we believed that were true.
That's for sure. Do you think that we're, astrologically speaking, and maybe in cahoots with the very thing you're talking about, do you think we're, as a species, absolutely making a quantum leap in how we can embody these levels of consciousness, how we can relate to the Earth? Are we doing it?
Well, I do, Monica. I think whether we want to or not, Pluto has shifted into Capricorn, and we're in a whole new era. It's the end of an era and a beginning of a new era. And this, I think we're going to have to now move forward with global solutions rather than, national solutions. And, this leap into the concept of humanity. Can I address the three main issues that are going on astrologically?
Please, yes. You can do more than that.
Well, we have Pluto in Capricorn, which happens every 250 years. And picture this, the last time this happened was 1763 to 1778. Well, that's exactly the years of the American Revolution.
And it resonates a little independence there, huh?
You bet. And a shift of the paradigm, wasn't it? And
great.
Now,
we love that.
And this, at that particular time, those who watched the John Adams specials on HBO last year, we watched all this birth and the discussion of how America was formed. And democracy was what was being birthed, and then the free enterprise became this vehicle of merchandising in the world. Over the years, this has somehow shifted. We're now, we're in the dilemma that particularly in our United States, we seem to have shifted to a capitalistic country that democracy is our vehicle for supporting capitalism. And I think that we're going to see a revolution in that and a realignment with the original intent, that it's really democracy that is the key, the voice of the people, and that getting the the right to make money and profit and prosper, which is the politics, which turned out to be the politics of greed in an unfortunate way, but that's what's shifting. And then this happened before then, where we're in a similar astrology to what was going on in 1510 to 1525. And now I know that's a long way back, but imagine being in a town of Florence, Italy, and during that era. And this was the Renaissance. And on any given date, I don't know, it must have been a fairly small community back then, but you could have run across Da Vinci, Michelangelo, and Raphael on any given day. In the same
your local at your local Woods coffee place in Seattle's best.
Yes, yes. And that's where we're at right now. We're in a renaissance. We're going to reinvent. That some of us are going to be accessing this highly creative collective. We build on each other. And that's what I wanted to bring that up. All three of them, masters, we would think. But they built on each other. They were influenced by each other. And all of us are right now as well, that there's this tremendous amount of creative spirit in humanity. And our puzzles in front of us are forcing us. I think that we are the people that we've been waiting for.
I think that we are the
tribe that came here. We've been waiting for the next savior, or Jesus, or Buddha, or the next political person, or the comedians, or the... We've been waiting for somebody. I think it's us. We are the people that have to rise up. It's humanity that will save humanity. So that, yes, we are making a quantum shift. Please.
And we are making a quantum shift. I know that. When you talk astrology, I was just wondering if, here's what I like to think, is that there's a presentation, meaning that if the quantum shift is such that we can move to more of a collaborative approach and more of a feminine balance, we don't have to move into a new level of greed, do we? Like,
well,
are we
going to
evolve?
Not at all.
Yeah.
I think that end of elitism and the end of favoritism, I think that's what's happened, is that that era, elitism and favoritism, which supports greed, is over. And that the other fascinating piece of our collective astrology right now, we have Jupiter, Neptune, Chiron, all three of them conjunct at the same degree of Aquarius, right on the United States' moon. Now,
wow.
The United States has the moon in Aquarius, which is, I think, typified by our Statue of Liberty. It's a great quote. I will misquote it. I'm calling it a quote, but I don't have the words exactly. But you'll remember it. It's, give us your tired, your hungry, your poor, the wretched masses yearning to be free. We'll take them. That's us. This is the spirit of the United States. And that is the moon in Aquarius in our natal chart. Well, right now, Jupiter, Neptune, and Chiron are sitting right on that. And this is a reawakening of vision, of creative, inspirational, and universal vision. Aquarius is a sign of humanity. And again, it's not feminine, it's not masculine, it's an androgynous. And what do you think, Veronica? I don't think the pole is going to shift back to, now we're going to move back to the Sumerian era when it was a feminine era. I think we're moving into an androgynous era. Not masculine, not feminine, human, humane.
I think so too. I want to see that it's a whole wave of possibility going on all over the place with people generating their own. There's just so much multidimensional influence at this time. I just love to think people are generating a much higher frequency attitude and approach to things. Does that make sense?
Oh, I love what you just said, higher frequency. And this is what I think most of us and your listeners would agree. It's when we're running the higher frequency energy that the magic happens. Our ability to manifest, to make things happen in the world, it really comes from being able to get into the quickened higher energy. Now, as we move towards 2012, the Mayan calendar, this is this quickening of the vibration. And I think time is literally speeding up. I think mm-hmm. our sense of that, and I think that we have to let go of our old way of looking at time. How much time do I have to prepare for this? How much time will it take to do such and such? Do I have enough time for this? Well, I think you and most of our listeners would agree that the our old model of time, if you hold on to it, you get fried. I can't do it all. But if you let go of it, you can. And this moving into this higher frequency, this higher vibration, William McDonald, a great architect who is working with the green movement and creating some of our first healthy office buildings, green office buildings and green communities, and in his beautiful book, Cradle to Cradle, he has a delicious phrase. He says he has a creed for his company that he would like to see them work with, and it's to love all children of all species for all times.
Wow.
Isn't that lovely? Mm-hmm.
That is lovely. I just immediately thought, and the grass seeds and the and the flowers and so on.
Yeah, of all species. Now, that is lovely poetic notion.
It really is.
But think of building policy around that. Think of him trying to create a policy for his company, a global company, that when they build their buildings, that's their creed. They want to create buildings and that have they're created to love all children of all species for all times.
So instead of sick buildings, we have...
Yeah.
Yeah, we have healthy buildings that are in cooperation with Mother Earth, right?
Exactly.
Hmm.
The green movement is very exciting. As we move to Pluto and Capricorn, the buzzword for the next 15 years, or how long it will be here, will become the word sustainable. No, that won't be the only buzzword, but I'm sure that you're hearing it, and I'm hearing it, and all of us are hearing it a lot. Mm-hmm. If something is not sustainable, it's not going to continue. And I think that's what we're in right now, a correction period, where our banking policies, our different kinds of policies, environmental or governmental, if the policies aren't sustainable, it's not going to continue. But that which is, and that means earth-friendly, doesn't it? It means that which can be in a cooperative rapport with the environment.
Well,
I'm quite excited
this.
About these times. Please.
Do you think that there's a rising... see, I'm not an astrologer. You know that. I'm an energy person. So I was just sort of likening, as you were speaking about the energy flows and the shifting frequency in the mass collective, which is how I'm interpreting it, it sort of reminds me of going through the chakras the way you did, is that there's a frequency rise in the collective as if we've moved from chakra to chakra, and that there's an expanding frequency as we get closer to, not that I think the top is the best, it's just that it includes a much more universal perspective, doesn't it?
Well, it does, and as we move up the chakras, each one of them is more inclusive, exactly.
And what about the war stuff? What do you think is what kind of astrological influences are going to help us with the whole war scenarios and the, you know, non-sustainable approach to one another that we've had there?
Boy, I wish I had an answer there, as all of us do, but when we look, Chiron in Aquarius, Chiron is the wounded healer from mythology, the sacred
right.
wound. And in Aquarius, we could say the wound of humanity is humanity's lack of humanity towards humanity. And wars are, get big picture, at one point humanity was hunters and gatherers, and then they started forming little tribes, and then these tribes started forming little communities and realizing, well, we can farm and raise animals. If we join together, we can watch each other's crops, and then cities, and then states, and then eventually civil wars lead to countries and nationalism, where, you know, nationalism is we're number one. We're looking out for our country first. I think this would now be a problem. and that wars are stemming from the concept that we're good, but they're not. This whole concept of lack of understanding of our universal connectedness, that we are all cells in the greater being of humanity, or all cells of consciousness in the body of God, Goddess, and energy. And that war is coming from that illusion that somehow there is another out there rather than us.
Mm-hmm. But it's so our connectedness that also...
As we move into this interconnectedness of the awareness that we're in, I would hope that war will become outdated, out, no longer fashionable.
Well, when we talk about the interconnectedness, I'm quite fascinated by that. I'm just thinking that isn't that pulse of awakening going on through the species, through all the cells? Isn't it kind of waking up across the board? Or you think I'm just being too Pollyanna here?
No, I think it is. And it's a quickening, that feeling of quickening. Now, if people don't understand the quickening, it's felt as nervousness. Because as we hook up with each other, we run a higher frequency energy. And as we tap in, and that's where the resolution, we're moving into a time of being able to tap into the global brain, like the mainframe computer in the sky that we all have our individual little PC computers on our desk, taps into the internet. Well, this is happening at the species level as well, that we're, as we start quickening, the vibration quickens. But if we think of it as nervousness, we'll just spend our whole time going to the doctors and getting medications to sedate ourselves, and sleep disorders and all of these are rampant right now because of a non-understanding of this, that this quickening is healthy and good. The one secret that would work better than any is breath. It's too simple, too free for people to really respect, but there's nothing more powerful. Andrew Weil, one of our country's great health teachers, teaches a simple breath that he swears in 1 minute you can lower your blood pressure by 10 points with this breath.
Yeah, I believe that for sure. Well, you're a yoga fellow. You must be doing lots of that yourself, eh?
I do, and I teach it quite a bit. And I'll share it with the listeners that the setup is to touch your tongue to the roof of your mouth, and keep your mouth slightly open, and so your tongue's right behind your teeth and slightly open. You keep your tongue there through the whole time. And the breathing is three parts. You breathe in through the nose for a count of four. You hold it for a count of seven, and out through the open mouth for a count of eight. That's it. And you do that four times, and that's it. It's about 40 seconds.
Oh, really?
And it shifts your energy. And I like the image, if you were a surfer, and a good surfer, but here comes the biggest wave you've ever seen yet, would there be any point with the intent of, if I could just quiet that wave, I think I could handle it? and that's what we're doing energetically. If I could just get this nervous energy to quiet down, I'd be okay. You can't. It's energy.
You're saying
you
ride
the wave. Ride it effectively or not. But the energy is energy.
Well, I love that. Tell me, when you're talking about the Summer of Love, that's the Jupiter, Neptune, and Chiron lineup, right? For the moon, is that right? For the American moon?
It sits on the American moon, but for the whole world, it's at 26 degrees of Aquarius today, and the United States' moon at the time of our birth was at 27, so they're all three going to go across the United States moon.
Well, and so tell me this, David.
We are in the very intense astrology of this last fall and winter, which has got our financial reorientation going on. I suspect we'll come back next fall, but right now we're in an interlude where we just have this lovely, positive opportunity to vision, to reconnect to the dream, to reconnect to the vision, the image of what's possible. And that's what's going on right now. For people who can access that positivity, take this quickened energy and ride that wave and access the universal mind, put puzzles in front of you, put problems in front of you, and we can solve them. Collectively, there's not much that we can't do together. And of course, there's not much that we won't be able to do together. We will be able to do this, of course. But this energy...
So this might be an interlude that could help us with the situations of war and famine and all that, too, eh?
Well, it could. I truly believe that the problem of Earth isn't the lack of resources. It's a poor distribution. And,
yes,
and I really take umbrage or issue with those who think it's always a population problem.
I don't agree with that either. I agree with you. Mm-hmm.
That's such a futile approach, isn't it, to think there's just too many? Because there's more coming. I mean, what do you do with that? And it's always other people that are too many. It's never the person thinking it's too many people here that think that it's always those other people.
I've read some wonderful stuff on it that says, of course, there's room all over the planet for who's here. In fact, it's not that full. It is just a distribution problem. My guides call it, it's actually an economic oligarchy, the way it's been running.
I like that. I like Peter Russell's book on the global brain. He likens the humanity to the brain of the planet Earth, that we're all cells of consciousness. And he tells this story. He says, in the mother's womb, when a baby is growing in the womb, each of the centers of the brain develop autonomously. The speech center, the sight center, the hearing center, and all the like, movement center. They all are developing autonomously. Until there's such a mass, and he uses the number 10 billion, until there's a sufficient amount of complexity that forces a larger organization that now it becomes unified as one being. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it is.
So he likens that
to
humanity and says, we don't have a population. Our population problem is that we don't have enough people yet. Until we have 10 billion, we're only two-thirds there.
To create a brilliant math. Yeah,
we need 10 billion of us, and then we'll have a sufficient amount of complexity that will force a larger level of organization that will bring us into more of a unitive state of consciousness.
Well, what do you think is happening with the kids that are being born these days? Do you think they're being born more alert to consciousness, more awake, more vibrant as far as, futuristic?
Absolutely. When you look at the charts of these children, they're born with the astrology that we're talking about. It's, for us, it's a transit. It's something that's happening today in this year, but it'll be different next year. For them, it's with them their whole life. Right? That's the birth chart.
So we're kind of the transitional people.
Yes, I agree. Mm-hmm. I think that so much, that we are the tribe in transition from the Pisces age to Aquarius age. We're born in transition. We're born to Pisces age values, and yet we're allegiant to Aquarius age universal values, and we're in transition. But they aren't born in that transition. They're born with the collective understanding. And in 1989 and 90, there was fascinating astrology going on, and we know there had to be, because that was when the Berlin Wall came down. That was the collapse of Russia when it dismantled, and that was Czechoslovakia, the Velvet Revolution. And this was all going on. There were three planets together at that time, Uranus and Saturn, and Neptune, and the last time that had happened was 1307, before then.
Now, what went on in 1307?
I don't know. I wasn't around. And I don't know.
Come on, you know about the Renaissance, huh?
I wish I could say something intelligent about that, Veronica. I don't know what was going on historically.
Hey, David, you told the truth. That was good.
But we know that this isn't common, and I joke about it because astrologers we don't know. It's like, so we're watching like this group of people who are born with that. And I think of them as people who have all the capacity in the world to be successful in the old archetype of elitism and favoritism, but they have no interest in it. They're going to be the ones who tear down the towers of elitism and favoritism and start working towards universal distribution of our resources.
And you say they started to come in around 1988?
89 and 90, yes. And this, and now we talk about the children being born, like you say, well, parents know this when you look into the eyes of these young children. I've got 6 grandchildren. And when I talk to the youngest ones, they won't allow baby talk. And if you say something redundant, you know, you said it, and then you're going to remind them, I get a look from them like, you already told me that? You know, this level of awareness, it's like they're the mature ones. And why are you doing this drill with me? I get this look like don't know what you're talking about.
I have one grandchild, but he's 4. But it is like they're from a whole different, they don't grow up like we did.
And don't you find that look in their eyes, Veronica, of your 4-year-old? I was thinking of a 4-year-old too, that had this look like, don't treat me like an infant.
Yeah. And they're so incredibly wise about a lot of things and so perceptive.
Mm-hmm.
When we were talking on the phone, you were talking about a Uranus. And I, like you, I really count on the fact that they're coming in with wisdom. They don't have to redo some of the hoo-ha that we had to come out of, you know. I believe that. But you were talking also about the Uranus opposition to Saturn.
That's right.
Is that the one that you said was like 1305?
This Uranus opposite Saturn happens every 45 years, and the last time was 1964 through 1967, and early 67 was through 1966.
Well, that was a hot diggity time.
Wasn't it? Yeah.
That was pretty exciting, wasn't it?
Yeah, we were young adults back then, Veronica, and what a fun, I mean, the college students were having sit-ins in opposition, taking over the colleges, in opposition to Vietnam War. Women were bringing their bras and leaving home and saying, I'll live with who I want. It was a radical time, and we are in it again. Now, this Saturn-Uranus, Uranus is in Pisces, and here's what we have to we have to get more skilled at understanding that our emotions are not a disease. We still treat
I want to ask you this. In the 64 time, was Uranus in Pisces then?
It was the opposite. They were reversed. The opposition was such that Saturn was in Pisces and Uranus was in Virgo.
Oh, okay.
So they were flipped.
And one more thing I'd like you to tell people at home something about Uranus, because I think it's very magical and very, Maybe you better just reframe what that is for people.
Thank you. It's the rebel, the revolutionary, or the reformer, but it's not the conformer. So it's about change, radical change, and evolution and quickening. Wherever Uranus is transiting in your chart is where the uncertainty principle, it's the wild card, coyote spirit in the medicine cards. It's change, it's dynamic growth, and it's the voice of evolution.
Maybe it's kind of quantum as well.
Pardon me?
Maybe it's kind of a quantum shifter as well.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah, it shifts us energetically, and if you don't handle it, it feels like nervous, anxious energy. If you handle it, it's this quickened, highly intuitive flashes, insights. We call it genius-like perceptions where Uranus is transiting, because you don't even think up the material. It just comes flashing in. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, Saturn is in Virgo right now as a counterbalance. And we'll be here till this fall, and all of us are needing to simplify. Get rid of clutter. I bet you most of your clients and our listeners would agree that, you know, the feeling of wanting to simplify, reduce our carbon footprint, spend less, clean out the garage, clean out the storage places. Oh boy, that's been going on. So when these two are opposites, it's pretty fascinating because this Saturn represents the desire to maintain status quo. It's the limit. It's consensus reality. This is how we do things. It's how it's going to work.
And
Uranus
karmic,
is radical,
right?
Evolutionary change. Hmm. And they peaked on their opposition on November 4th. That was the day of the election.
Uh-huh.
And it was so interesting to watch. One of the candidates was perfectly aligned with the Saturn energy, a staunch resistance to change. And one of the candidates was totally open to change. And you could see their debate as astrodrama right in front of our eyes. And here's how it works astrologically. When like Uranus has an 84-year orbit, Saturn has a 29-year orbit. So Uranus encompasses Saturn and then some. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So if they're in a dialogue, Uranus is going to win.
Uh-huh.
And if it was Saturn and Mars, if they're in a dialogue, Saturn would win because it encompasses the Mars transit and then some. See?
So Saturn can often weigh things down, can't it?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's the word. Weight, heavy, dense. These are all Saturn words. Leaden.
And it's kind of karmic. Is it karmic?
Yeah, they call it the Lord of Karma.
Mm-hmm. So we're coming into kind of a battle in the stars here, so to speak. Not a battle, but an energetic.
Yes, that's
sign.
A fair word. That's fair, Veronica. It's a struggle, certainly, because this is going to happen five times. It happened last November 4th. It happened in February. Now it's going to back off for our Summer of Love. And then we're going to see it again in the fall, and then next April, and then next July. And as it goes into July, Uranus shifts into Aries, Saturn shifts into Libra, and they both are squared by Pluto. And astrologers the world over are, it's called, there's a lot of concern about it. That's even more heavyweight astrology than what we've just been through. And that's
so
why I'm reminding people, you got the three heavyweights of astrology in dynamic tension with each other. And that's why I think that we don't want to just party hardy during this Summer of Love, but re-envision. Now, if we have a little breather and we want to get reorganized and restructure our life along visionary levels, if you got a little breather, now is the time to do it.
Okay. So that's getting clear about our intentions, our visualizations, cleaning the clutter of our thoughts as well as our garage, right?
Well said.
What about the economic world? I guess that's what you're talking about as well, is to get a bit of a reprieve and then the challenge is on, is it?
Well, I believe that, and I think that we're going to see that my feeling is that we're going to, as long as we don't fall into false optimism with this, we're going to see the stock market improve over this summer. We're going to see financial issues, and people think, oh, okay, here we go. Things are coming back to normal. Well, let's not get lulled into believing that. I think that, the financial issue is... The Saturn-Pluto is in a waning square, technical astrology, but it usually means that we're still in a wind-down period. And this, we've got to imagine that where we're moving to is likely to be, we have to shift from a perpetual growth economy. We've always wanted our economy to grow. Every year we want the GMP to grow where we kick the bums out, right?
mm-hmm.
Now that Pluto's in Capricorn, we have to take a look. Can you have a perpetual growth-based economy in a fixed system of resources. And we've always known this. Futurists and science fiction writers said, hey, someday there'll be a reckoning. Well, we didn't realize that that someday was this day. But that's what we have, at least three. We've got the United States and China and India, all huge, ratcheting up economies, consuming more resources, needing bigger markets. And then we get Pluto and Capricorn, where we're aware of, oh, there's a finite amount of people and resources on our planet. So here's the restructuring. The restructuring, we're going to eventually move, in my mind, to a zero-growth economy as an ideal. And that's going to take some time because it doesn't settle. People will resist that. It's like we weren't raised with that notion that that could be good at all. We should grow forever.
So what does that look like for the individual supporting their family? Does it look like entrepreneurial? Does it look like investment? Does it look like, it doesn't have to be mass poverty, does it?
No. And those who make the adjustments and move towards sustainable investments and sustainable economy, and it is all about vibration. It's all about intention and vibration. There will be those who hang on to the old way. No, I'm supposed to have all of this stuff, and that's just the way it's supposed to be. I think they will have trouble. But those who adjust and adapt and move into more of a cooperative situation. See, the other thing we can say about this Jupiter-Neptune-Chiron conjunction, some of the people are hearing about the future. Oh, we're at the, what they call it, peak oil and all these kinds of issues. They say, well, we've got to start hoarding then. You need a basement full of beans. Yeah. I don't think that's what's going to work. I think it's community building.
Yeah, a different way of global economics has to run differently entirely, doesn't it?
It does.
I'm a little worried about people's
identity.
Port Townsend
right up there by you, Port Townsend, is a great example where they've just over this last year, they've started 26 community gardens in a town of only 6,000 people.
Wow.
But isn't that lovely?
Isn't that
26
wonderful?
Community gardens. That's another way of dealing with this. So people who get in and share and cooperate and do community building and raise the vibration and think about future generations and don't get locked into fear, but use vision and imagery towards supporting and unifying, I think they're going to walk through this unscathed.
Mm-hmm.
And
I
those who
that,
get locked
yeah.
down into fear and get into greed and get into hoarding,
there's a massive nervous breakdown going on amongst people whose identity has been shattered, and that's a whole other talk which we'll have one day. Well, David, this has just been very wonderful. Tell people when you're going to Ireland, how people can get in touch with you. I would carry on, but we're coming to the end of our time, unfortunately.
Oh, goodness, it did go by. Thank you, Veronica. Yes, well, my name is David Pond. My website is reflectingpond.com, and all of my services there. I'm an astrologer by trade and a writer, and all of my books and services are listed there. Our trips that we do, my wife and I take people to wonderful sites to explore. We're leaving for Ireland.
You do yoga there too, don't you?
Pardon me?
You do yoga at these places at times too, don't you?
Yes, we do. Well, as we get older, we're doing less training with yoga. We're doing more of a morning tune-up with the five Tibetans and walking through the Irish forest will be more of our exercise on this particular trip, and then we'll be doing the teachings of the book, The Pursuit of Happiness, and going through the chakras. But can I give my phone number or not?
Yes, please do.
My phone number is 360-918-8411, and that's my wife Lori would answer the phone, and we. Glad to talk about these and other things, and check out my website, reflectingpond.com. My email is dpond@reflectingpond.com, and I love to share. So.
And repeat your phone number again. It was an interruption for me.
Well, thank you. 360 918-8411.
Well, this has just been really delightful for me. You've got me thinking. I'm thinking about, I guess the Summer of Love sounds the most appealing of it all, but it's a lot of incentive for evolving and staying conscious and visualizing and sharing, isn't there?
Well, there is, and it's one of our local astrologists here in Olympia, Rosie Finn, said that this is catch-up time, that many people are already awakened to vision, but humanity isn't, and that many people have already awakened to many of our thoughts of sharing universal energy and movement forward, but we have to get the word out. We need more of us.
Well, it is contagious, isn't it, David? So
it is.
Thank you for sharing your ponderings with us.
Well, thank you, Veronica, for asking me on the show. I've enjoyed our interaction as always.
Me too. And have a wonderful trip to Ireland. I hope you have a lot of people going with you because it sounds like it would be very inspiring. And you're going to Fintorn as well, eh? Great. Well, have fun. Thank you so much, David.
Nice to reconnect, Veronica.
Good
day.
Good night. So that was David Pond, and that sounds so, well, he sure gave us a lot to think about in the big waves of change going on around the planet. This is Veronica Entwistle. Thank you so much for listening, for joining in. And next week I have a person who's in the business world, and I'm not going to give a name because I have two possibilities. I'm not sure which one's coming on. But Thursday night I'm going to be on with Jackie Salvitti and her wonderful channeled team talking about ET healing and explorations in consciousness, which is what this is all about, isn't it? We're all exploring consciousness and how we can employ it consciously for the sake of the shifting collective on our planet at this time. Let's just call in some love and some light. Call it in from the universe. Breathe it in, run it through our body, and then let's just send it out to everyone. Say everyone listening, let's just send it out there and take some love and some blessings and pass them on. Thank you again for listening. Email me, Veronica at VeronicaEntwistle, no H in Entwistle.com, Veronica at VeronicaEntwistle.com. Much love.